Welcome back to Schneps Connects. Today we are joined by Marjorie Parker. She's the president and CEO of Jobs First NYC, which is an organization driving economic and employment opportunities for young people by connecting a network of over 200 partner agencies. Under Marjorie's leadership, Jobs First NYC has connected more than 16,000 young adults to jobs, education, and career paths, transforming the systems that support them. With over 25 years of expertise in youth and adult service initiatives, Marjorie is among the 13% of female leaders of color who head sizable nonprofit organizations. Backed by top partners like JPMorgan Chase, the Robin Hood Foundation, and a recent $4 million investment from Mackenzie Scott's Yield Fund, Jobs First NYC is scaling its impact across multiple states. Marjorie and I will discuss her mission and the future work of workforce development for young adults. So, Marjorie, great to have you on, and thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Josh, for inviting me to this conversation today. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. It sounds like great work you're doing, and you know, really would love for you to talk about how you got started in this field.
You know, Josh, my path to this work is an immigrant story of the American dream. Now, my family immigrated from Jamaica in the 1980s to an America that seems endlessly filled with possibilities. We were fortunate to have benefited from a lot of what America has to offer. But you know, throughout my time in college and early work, I began to learn about the challenges to achieving these American dreams. You know, the more I learned, the more I became focused on the question of what could I do to help reduce or eliminate these challenges? And that's what brought me to the work that I'm doing today, and that's what brought me to Jobs First NYC.
I love it. Yeah. Well, share a little bit of the history and impact of Jobs First NYC and, you know, maybe some of the milestones in the company's journey.
I'm happy to do so. So, you know, Jobs First NYC is 18 years old. I've been here for the last 10 years. We are a workforce intermediary that helps communities by developing, testing, and scaling innovative economic solutions. So we work across sectors. That's government, that's philanthropy, that's nonprofits, private sector employers, about 200 plus institutions over the last few years to collaborate on increasing economic opportunities and connecting people to better jobs to ensure that they have the skills in demand in the labor market and to improve the overall economic health of their communities. And the way to think about us is what makes us unique is in our approach, like a venture capital firm for economically challenged communities. We find and develop solutions that work. We get it funded, and then we scale it so more people and communities can benefit from it to create lasting change. And all of that is based on if the solution works, then it gets scaled. If it doesn't work, then we figure out what happened. But that's our work. And ultimately, as an intermediary, you can think of us, lots of intermediaries too, as incubators and accelerators. We connect communities and our partners with resources, skills, and investment needed to improve their economic health. And then we connect investors and those seeking more impactful, long-lasting social and economic solutions to opportunities where there is greater return on their investment. So that's how we think about our role as an intermediary, and that's the work that we do at Jobs First.
So as a business owner, you know, I can understand the importance of that. And I want to raise my hand. How do I get involved? You know, and I'm sure there's a lot of businesses that really appreciate the work that you do, because running a business is all about the people that work for you, and finding talented, hardworking, caring people is not easy. Really, it's not easy. So I could understand how you find businesses that are seeking to work with you, but how are you finding those individuals that are looking for career opportunities?
I say I recently ran the New York City Marathon.
Oh, congrats.
And thank you. I run for a group, there's a plug-in here called Team for Kids New York. You know, they raise money for youth and community programs, which is at the heart of what we do at Jobs First. Unconnected work, but it's why I chose the organization to run with. As I run across the five bars, I think about the work we've been doing in each of them since our founding, right? And all of that work is centered on the people across the five boroughs of New York City, and how do we connect to them through the institutions that we work with, right? Yeah. So the way that we look at, you know, a question you asked me earlier about milestone, the way that we look at our work is through the impact that we're having on the people and the communities that we work with, on the people and the institutions that we work with, public policies and then the impact on investment. And so all of that, those 16,000 that you mentioned before as the number of people that we've reconnected to opportunities, all of that is tied into that milestone. So when we think about how do we find the people that we work with, those are through our institutions and our partners, 200 plus institutions that we work with. And that's nonprofits, that's the employers who hire the people that our nonprofits work with, that's the employers that we work with to come on board to serve our sector. And also, when we think about how employees respond to us, really is about how we help them to understand that our sector is a place that develop a good talent pipelines, and that our sector is a place that they can come to seek their next set of employees. And so that's how employees find us. How policymakers find us, for example, is in the adaptation of our work that we do. So when it works, when it produces better outcomes, then policymakers are also interested in that. Government is interested in that, and they're interested in how they adapt their work. If I look at the past year, for example, Josh, a lot of the work we've developed, the solutions that are on the way, the initiatives that are active, three quarters of them have got more investment in this past year. And they got those increased investment because they have been greater success in what they're doing. So, success, the old saying, right? People like to be associated with things that are successful. In the work that we do, in the solutions that we develop, our partners, their government, their philanthropy, their employers, their nonprofit, those partners get together, we work together so that we can reach the people whose very existence is why we do our work. And these are the 16,000 people that we work with so far across New York City. And, there are millions of people here that needs a lot more help.
And I assume that if you're an employer or someone seeking a career, they could go to your website to learn more.
Well, yeah, absolutely. All of our solutions are there, all of our milestones are there. You'll be able to see that we've scaled a lot of our solutions, and that the models, they're scalable because they can be modified, they can be adapted to community, they allow communities to thrive economically, they foster local growth. Ultimately, for us, when the solutions we develop have secured great investment, and which is why you'll see five place-based or six place-based communities on our website if you go to visit, these are solutions that have been adapted and replicated, where they're reaching more people and more people are benefited from it. And for us, that's impact at scale, and why jobsters, NYC, like intermediaries like us, Josh, exists. So visit our website. You can see all the work that we do there and learn more. Reach out to us.
So you talked about milestones. A big one is that you've expanded your work recently to Pennsylvania and Nevada, which is great. So how are the organization's partnership models and goals evolving to serve those communities in the new states? And I really imagine they have to be a little bit different to work in the New York.
Yes, they are. But I have to tell you, Josh, in the US, we have close to 5 million young people who are not connected to work or education. That's 11% of the 16 to 24-year-old age group in the United States. That
That's
is
right.
significant. And the latest data we have was the data from 2022. 2023 is not out yet, but we don't think that has changed much. This significant number of young people have really been left out of the economy and the conversation. So conversations about where to get talent to match the increasing demands for talent in the labor market, they're not improved pathways to good jobs and education. So they're not included in the conversation. Pennsylvania, Nevada, like New York, are two examples where this issue is prevalent. There is a significant number of young people living in communities struggling to connect to economic opportunities. There is a significant amount of young people, employers seeking talent, but the talent development structure doesn't match what they're seeking. And there, like Nevada, has significant income and economic activities. They're getting a new railway, first time in many, many years, that connects California to Nevada, for example. It will generate a lot of jobs. What are the structures that we'll have in place in all these communities that will help them connect to these opportunities? And that's why these two communities are of interest to us as we look at amongst these two and many other communities across the country, where we can incubate and accelerate the type of solutions that will connect communities to good jobs, to education, and to better economic opportunities.
It sounds great. Just you're gonna have to stay up very late because now that you're doing business on the West Coast.
It is so exciting. I don't love flying out, with these huge time differences. When I get there, I'm so excited to to be on the ground with the folks who are really doing this work every day.
We talked a little bit in the intro about some of your funding, and obviously there's got to be strategic investment and planning that goes into bridging this talent gap that there is. How do you go about raising funding, and how do you implement your plans to bridge that gap? And I have to imagine that philanthropic investment plays a big part in that.
Of course, and I'm so glad you're asking this question. I could say so much, but we only have so much time here. But I'll tell you how we do it, and I'll talk a little bit about, really how I think philanthropy is, how they do it now, but how they could do it better. For us, we raise funds through a collaborative investment strategy. So similar to how we were funded, right? We were funded through a funder collaborative, right? And I'll tell you a little bit more about that. That means each solution we propose require us to build a collaborative group of investors. It's called a funder collaborative. So JobSource was funded through a funder collaborative called the New York City Workforce Funders Group, right? That was a group of investors that listened to their community. And within that group, two foundations decide what we really need as a collaborative to do something about this problem in New York City, where at the time, there were over 200,000 plus young people who were out of work and out of school across the five boroughs. If you hear New York, that's a lot of people
Yeah, sure.
to be not working. And so the Funder Collaborative is a group that agrees together to pool their investment to build new solutions or to scale a solution when it works. And so JobSource NYC is, we're incubating and accelerating these workforce funder collaboratives in regions that do not have enough investment and that would benefit from having a pool fund strategy that can increase investment and impact. So in Northeastern Pennsylvania, we're building a funder collaborative there, for example, that kicked off that group earlier this year. And pool funds can build a more effective workforce system in a community or a region. So, for example, pool funds could help a local community develop a technology skills training program that an individual investor may not be able to do alone, right? So maybe it costs $1 million. And that investor says, I can only give $50,000 because we have a very small philanthropy. So if you imagine you need $1 million to build a technology program, a few local investors may say, I'll give $50,000. A large national funder will say, I'll give $500,000. A regional philanthropy will say, well, we'll give $100,000 each. And now you have $1 million in your pool fund. That's what supports strategic planning that leads to the development of talent, right? But that build a bridge to bridge the talent gap because now you have the money to pay for the training. There's demand for jobs and technology in the market, and now you can connect people to those. So pool funding and funded collaboratives, I think, are really important for this type of work that we do, but we think they're important for scaling and having larger impact because you need those resources to do it.
Well, it sounds like also having like a group of stakeholders is amazing. And from what you said, it sounded like you have one of the richest people in the world, which is pretty good because it was philanthropy, right? Like the investment from Mackenzie Scott's Yield Fund. So how is that shaping the future of nonprofit work in terms of philanthropies? And what ways do you think philanthropy can go beyond financial support to help nonprofit organizations?
So Josh, I don't know about in your sector, but in mine, there are two holy grails. One is to get investors to give us money that is unrestricted. So we determine how that money is spent. Another holy grail is to get employers to pay for everybody that we train that they hire. Those pool fundings from philanthropies usually pay for those training. And an employer benefit from having that develop talent that can access. We would like them to pay for some of that talent development. But Mackenzie, we're grateful for the investment from Mackenzie Scott. It is a proof point that investors see value in our work. Mackenzie Scott is among some of the most discerning investors in the country at this time, and many of who see value in the work that we do as a workforce intermediary. So these types of private sector leaders are now partnering with effective nonprofits and leaders in order to support solutions that work beyond financial support. And I think they're doing so to address some of the most critical issues in America. And it's not just workforce, it's mental health, it's a range of other challenges that we have. Well, in our sector, building the workforce of the future is critical. And I think for a lot of the investors that we work with, that's important to them. I think more broadly, philanthropy can even go further to support effective nonprofit to achieve even greater impact. And that's that first holy grail I mentioned, make an unrestricted investment, right? Kansas God. Trusting that leaders of these organizations, they know best what the problems are. They will know best what the solutions will be. So trust them to make the best use of these resources to do more and better work as they see fit for the community that they serve. And I think that's where philanthropy, we've seen a movement here. Mackenzie Scott has sparked the movement here, and we're hoping that more investors will begin to see investing this way as effective.
Well, it's great that you're benefiting from that. And I would really love to hear some of your future plans for Jobs First NYC. We talked about the expansion and to two other states, but what are some more of your future plans?
Oh, I can't reveal those right now. If it's not on the website and it hasn't been announced. What I would say, to anyone who wants to learn more about us, our work that we're currently doing in Nevada and in Pennsylvania, those are on the website, and the work around that is on the website in a project that we call Community Inspired Networks for Change. And this is where we're incubating and accelerating local workforce development intermediaries in communities that can benefit from them. And that's what we're doing in Nevada, and that's what we're doing in Pennsylvania. And that's the work that we're doing now. We imagine that we'll do a lot more of this work as we attempt to work with our partners at this 5 million issue, 5 million young people across the country issue, as we look at ways that we can get more of them connected to work and education. And that's kind of the work that we are focused on right now as we begin to think about stuff. We're also thinking about adaptive AI, for example, how AI will impact the workforce. And we're doing some work around that. For 10 years, we're not new to this. For 10 years now, we've been researching AI and technologies impact in hiring. And the reason that we've been focused on hiring is that a lot of our partners were raising to us that 10 years ago, that do you remember the days when you used to be able to walk into like a CVS, or a Walgreens or a Walmart or a Dunkin' Donuts, and you could fill out your paper application in those places, right?
Sure.
Well, application migrated online. And so as they migrated online, it became more confusing because we didn't know, well, what are the measures they were using to determine if someone is qualified? And when we took a closer look at this 10 years ago, it's about when I came to Jobs First, we looked at personality assessment tests and how they were being used in these online recruitment process, for example. And that report is called Online But Disconnected. And if you want to read more, folks want to see more, it's on our website. But we found some very interesting things there around, the tests were biased, of course, as we tend to find out in a lot of these tests when we take a closer look at them. But we've also been looking at how to leverage adaptive AI to assist skills proficiency by neighborhood. So, we've partnered with some AI companies that one company that they've been recently merged with another company they call SkyHive. But anyway, we've been working with them on how to utilize adaptive AI to assess skill proficiency by neighborhood. And for us, it's really about how do we build reskilling and upskilling plans for like an entire neighborhood, build on their unique strengths and abilities as we try to think about how do we create direct pathways to higher wage jobs. And that's what we keep thinking about. It's finding low wage jobs is not a challenge. Finding high wage jobs is. So we've been looking at how we could look at skills and determine what is prevalent, and then how can we build on those skills towards the jobs that pay more resources. And then the other way that we've been using AI as we continue to look at it, and then all of us are talking about AI at the moment, is we've been thinking about how to help a neighborhood more quickly identify its resources and its needs. So what's available there? And what are the needs that they have that need solving? We've been working with another partner on utilizing their adaptive AI around this. And for us, it's really about how do you speed up the process of finding the right fit for place-based solutions? So if you can understand the resources and the needs, then you can better understand what you're solving for. And the AI helps us to do that more quickly. And so that's some of the stuff that we are actually working on when you ask about future. or
Yeah, well, I'm so happy to hear that.
some of the that's aside from expanding out, we're also looking at some of the things that just it's affecting workforce development at this moment, and AI has been something we've been looking at for the last 10 years.
Well, listen, being in the role that you are, which is to train people in the workforce and to get companies to want to hire them, thinking about AI and new technologies is critical. So it's so great to hear that. You had mentioned a little bit earlier in our conversation about people getting involved, whether that's individuals seeking employment or companies looking to hire, that they could get involved through, I guess, going to your website. What is your website?
It is jobsfirstnyc.org, JOBSFIRSTNYC.org. Or you can follow us on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram. Our website connects to all of our social media channels.
You know, one piece of advice I would love for you to maybe think about if you could share, kind of just asking you off the cuff here is, you know, what should employers think about when it comes to training their own people? Because I'm a big believer that you have to be a constant learner in your career. You know, it's like training is never over. It's not like you go to college and that's your training. You know, I feel like the real world is where you get your best experience. But is there any advice that you could give to employers in terms of how they should think about offering training for their employees?
Well, if you look at current data, it says when we look at training and skilling and upskilling, most of that now comes from employers training and retraining their employees. And they largely do it towards how their institutions are changing and how they need to build the capacity of their team. Could step back a little bit and say, if the question maybe is about how do you on-ramp new employees and better prepare them to become a part of your business or your industry that can help with retention, right? And I would say in that way, incoming employees understand what are the opportunities across their companies and how are they able to access those opportunities once they're in. Will they need more training? Will they need more education? How many years of something they may have to do? Would they need mentorship? And I would say if you are hiring from diverse communities that you also need to understand who are the people who are currently here? What are the cultures and diversities we now have? What are the cultures and diversities we're hiring for? And how are those things aligning? Because as a leader of an institution, you can say, well, these are the rules and everyone must follow them. But we all come to work with our histories, our background, our cultures. And I think that something that employers, I would say to employers to look at, really looking at when you're onboarding new employees, who are these people? Where are they coming from? What cultural fit are they bringing? How does it fit with the cultures that you already have? Their organization culture, how we work, how we do business, our stories, their individual cultures that they bring with them inside institutions. So I say taking a deeper look at what is that cultural diversity that you currently have, and what is the cultural diversity that you're bringing in? How do you make sure that you are best as you can understand how those things will melt so that they can really improve your bottom line as an employer and what you hope to get out of the employees they contribute to your organization? So that's kind of what I would be thinking about as an employee in this world that's more diverse culture, more diverse talent that's coming in.
Well, Marjorie, that sounds like great advice to me, and I
Yes.
really appreciate it and appreciate your time sharing the mission of Jobs First NYC. And I hope some of our listeners will reach out and take advantage of the services that you offer. So thank you.
Thank you, Josh. This was wonderful. I appreciate it. Let's do it again.
Yeah, let's absolutely do it again. And Marjorie, I have to feature you in our Caribbean Life media
Ah,
for
good. I
sure.
would love
You're
that.
definitely a star that we need to profile.
I would love that.
Make sure to listen to this podcast and all of our podcasts available at podcast.schnepsmedia.com, or you can stream us through all major podcast platforms.